Hi there. Welcome to The Preventable, the podcast giving you a seat at the table with conversations about the intersection of alcohol, drugs, and mental health in everyday lives. Take a seat and join us.
Welcome to The Preventable. With me today is somebody that I've only just sort of briefly met, but as soon as I met her, I was like, oh my gosh, we have to get her on the podcast because I think everybody needs to know about this. And once you start hearing from her and about her organization, I think you're going to totally agree. So I am just thrilled to introduce on The Preventable, Dr. Seema Rastami.
Correct.
I'm saying it right. Okay. All right. Executive Director of the Gateway Alliance Against Human Trafficking. Welcome.
Thank you.
So human trafficking, whoa, that is a heavy subject. So before we get into that and what that means and what it is and what it's not, I just want to tell everybody listening and watching that we met at a funder meeting, and we're both relatively new at being funded from this entity, the St. Charles County Community Resource Board. And, you know, I think we share some challenges in getting folks to understand that talking about substance use or human trafficking doesn't mean it's going to happen. Like, we're simply educating folks about things that are already happening and helping people be able to recognize and maybe intervene. And so I think that's really where you and I sort of bonded, is these are sort of heavy topics that people struggle with wrapping their brains around. So I'm just really appreciative of you, you know, coming on and doing this work, because I know it's very hard work. So let's start kind of at the beginning with, what is human trafficking? Not drug trafficking, not, you know, what is specifically human trafficking?
Well, thank you so much, first of all, for the opportunity. It was a pleasure to meeting you and have the chance to be with you and talk about this important issue with your audience. So human trafficking is relatively a new field in the United States and in the world. So the issue of human trafficking has been a common practice among human race for thousands of years. We all know about different forms of exploitations of human being, whether for this purpose of sexual abuse and sexual exploitation or labor exploitation of individuals. However, there are some cornerstones in the history of the world, including United States, that human trafficking become an individual practice in the criminal justice system lately. In the United States, the only law we have federally to prosecute human traffickers established in 2000.
Say that again. So in the United States, the only federal law we have was created in 2000.
That is correct.
So this is not a new phenomenon, but what you're saying is that it is a phenomenon that we are now paying attention to.
That is correct. And we try to hold traffickers and criminals of the field legally responsible and accountable for their practices and what they are using against human being, especially vulnerable population.
So is slavery human trafficking?
Was that
considered human trafficking for labor or not really?
So there is actually an important literature argument among scholars about it, because there are a group of scholars that call human trafficking as modern day slavery.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
However, slavery by itself has a special place in the history of the humanity and the United States. So we prefer not to mix them with each other and approach that separately. especially the 2000 was a cornerstone, an important era in the field against human trafficking. So slavery by itself should be the way it is, because slavery is an important historical issue for human beings. And human trafficking is also another important issue that is still happening, because practically slavery was eliminated.
Right. Okay.
Years ago.
But human trafficking is still very much alive and well.
Exactly. And it's going to keep going this way.
And so when we talk about drug trafficking, so the word trafficking, mm-hmm. it really refers to the whole kind of system. Right? Like the transport, the purchasing, the covert nature of funneling drugs from one place to another. When we talk about human trafficking, does that also encompass kind of the whole system that would be the, because you can't sell something if there's not a purchaser, mm-hmm. right? And if there's not the modes of transportation and all of that. So is it a broad term when we think about human trafficking?
That is correct. And human trafficking has its own elements. So in the human trafficking, we have victims, we have yes. perpetrators, and we have the buyers. And we cannot fight against human trafficking without addressing all of these issues, including the community and society that actually
right.
this crime happens within it. So when we are talking about preventing human trafficking, we actually try to hold all of these factors responsible for the role they are playing in this cycle. What is the responsibility of a society and community? What's the responsibility of those buyers and then traffickers that put those vulnerable people in a position to become victims?
And so I'm thinking, you know, I think that we're still sort of talking about it at an academic level. So let's pretend like my mom is listening to this, mm-hmm. okay? Like if my mom is listening to this, I'm going to go out on a limb and assume my mom has no idea what we're talking about. So just to break it down, we're talking about people who maybe are being bought and sold for sex?
For labor.
For labor. So to work somewhere, usually at very low cost, right? Or are being transported to basically work for sex or because of that. And so it's not something that is out in the open, right?
Yeah.
So you have to be very intentional about looking for some of the signs.
That is correct.
And I want to talk about those signs in a minute, but just like with something like domestic violence or sexual violence, I've seen a lot of your advertisements, maybe not yours specifically, but in general with human trafficking, like in restroom stalls, mm-hmm. at airports and hotels, because presumably that's where a person would be able to have a minute by themselves.
Correct.
To actually be able to report.
Correct. So let me go one step back to try to define it, because, you know, unfortunately, there are so many misunderstandings about human trafficking in our society.
Yes, I'm sure.
Usually people think human trafficking happens via kidnapping, or that little girl is the victim of human trafficking only. And so many other issues, like those immigrants that can't speak English, are victims. Although we have some cases, including this type of victimization or condition, majority of cases we see at the domestic levels do not include kidnapping.
So these are people that they know.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. And this is the key to that, because human trafficking happens through coercion, psychological manipulation, fraud. So what happens is that in order for a human trafficking situation to happen, you need three elements. And those three elements of acts of traffickers, means of human trafficking, and purposes of human trafficking. So acts of a human trafficker, who is the criminal here, is very clear and it is defined by the law. The human trafficker needs to engage in activities to recruit, to transfer, to move, or provide a location, or
receive. Yeah, so you're moving a person.
Exactly.
You're moving a person.
Or you're recruiting the person. Or you're selling the person, like advertising an individual, a minor. And then they are receiving the fund, which was in exchange of those services. And then in the meantime, it is happening. The means of human trafficking means that there isn't any consent on behalf
right.
of the victim.
Right.
If they are minors, particularly concerning sex trafficking, the law considers minors that there is no way for them to be able to consent.
No. Is that under 18?
Yes, under 18 for commercial sex considers to be that they are not able to just consent to the activities there. So they are protected. However, then for the adults, we need to prove for the system that there was a coercion, means psychological manipulation, or fraudulent activities on behalf of the traffickers.
Saying that you'll be paid once you get there, or saying that
nothing going to happen.
Right.
Or they force them, for example, put a gun on their head or put them in a chain or situation that they didn't have any consent for the activities they have been doing. And
so
then, lastly, the purposes of human trafficking.
Yeah.
Then that those actions which are providing commercial sex acts or labor servitude needs to occur so that we say that actually the crime happened.
Hmm. So I want to talk, I definitely want to talk about things to look for. I want to talk about that. But I'm sure at this point in our conversation, some people are like, wait. We are in Missouri, okay? We are in the Midwest. That doesn't happen here. That happens with people overseas or down by our southern border or something like that. That doesn't happen here. What would you say to people that are saying that right now?
Well, unfortunately, I need to inform them that they are mistaken, because as an area that we are located in the Midwest and in the heartland, actually, we are a hub for human traffickers. Let's just not forget our history that a couple of hundred years ago, St. Louis area was one of the top main cities in the United States. And
really?
There were so many foundations in this area that actually put our area in a way to be
like the highways.
Exactly.
Yep.
We have highways, we have the river. We have 12 airports in our area. Majority of people only heard about International Lambert Airport. But there are other smaller airports that actually are used by private sections, by corporations, that actually they are a good target that could be easily used by human traffickers with lack of regulations, perhaps, because they are private airports.
I wouldn't even have thought about that. I mean, you're right. People think of Lambert, but they don't think of all the smaller airports. I mean, to me, like that would be a prime.
And all of those private planes can land and then take off without all of those checks of DHS or other normal checking points that happens in big airports.
Well, and I know the highway systems and the fact that they're, you know, that we are right in the middle and that there are so many major highways and that 70, you know, goes right through us. I know that always puts us towards the top of the list for drug trafficking. So it would stand to make sense why, you know, we would also have that with human trafficking. So let's say that I have no idea what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what would be some things that I should be on the lookout for? Not just if I own a hotel or if I own a, you know, a business, but also maybe if I'm just like rolling up at a truck stop, getting gas or at the local big box store, you know, like what would be some things that I should be paying attention to?
So without even naming any of these signs, there is a general rule that I always tell people that they are looking for signs, and it's that trust your guts.
Word. When that is so feel, true.
When you feel something doesn't sound right, perhaps it is not right. The problem with issues such as human trafficking that happens under illegal industries, that victims are under the impression of coercion, that many of them even don't know that they are victims. It is difficult to identify it. So I could provide you a list of 1 to 20, A to Z, until you look at them. And if you have 5 of them, 10 of them, they are human trafficking. And if you didn't have them, then it is not human trafficking. I could be wrong, because there are some situations that they may have many of the items on the list, but it's not human trafficking. It's domestic violence. It's abuse. Yep.
Right.
It's sexual assault or so many other issues. But we could be in a situation that none of those items in the list exist, but it is human trafficking.
Yeah, and because I think what you're saying is so, I mean, kind of mind-blowing, that a large majority of the people who are being human trafficked don't even understand it or know that it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you're being coerced or controlled because of power, but you don't even necessarily know it's happening. So you're not going to pick up the phone and call someone because you're not even aware, maybe.
Absolutely. This is majority of cases we see in the domestic form of human trafficking, meaning the cases happens in our local communities. With that being said, there are some signs that we ask the community to look into them. So some of the signs that we have seen observed among domestic survivors of human trafficking, it has been all interpersonal signs. We have seen that survivors of human trafficking, they exhibit high level of depression, low self-esteem, lack of trust. They don't trust anyone, especially authorities. Doesn't matter that authority is a teacher or a counselor in a school, or it is law enforcement or a prosecutor. And then they may come out with some injuries. It could be physical injuries, it could be infection, it could be, especially particularly within labor traffic population, we have seen so many issues and diseases and infections concerning their teeth.
Yes. Oh, because they don't have access to dental care? Or
exactly. And there is a key to this. So when traffickers sadly exploit victims for commercial sex exploitations, all they care about is just maintaining the body of the victim in a way that the buyer actually pay for that body. But when it comes to labor trafficking, traffickers don't care at all how the victim look. They want to maintain that body, that labor, so that they are able to do the job. And here is the difference. When this is important, sometimes we see that, or we hear in the news, or we see in our everyday life, that traffickers just drop off a victim at the point of a hospital ER system, and someone made an anonymous call so that ER or the ambulance system responded to that situation. Traffickers do not do this out of the kindness of their heart. They do it because they hope the ER system, hospital system, be able to maintain the body so that they can exploit further. And that is the difference. They exploit the body or the labor of their victim as long as they can. And at the point that they realize that there is no use for that body, they just get rid of that body and individual, unfortunately. So for human traffickers, sadly, and I apologize to you and audience for saying this, for human traffickers, individuals, human beings, from children to adults to senior citizens, they see these people as a tool in their toolbox.
Right.
So that they can make money out of
it. It's a means to an end.
Exactly.
It's not a human being. It's a vessel to make money.
That's it.
It's so interesting because I think you're right. I think that, you know, a lot of people think of human trafficking as day laborers or kids, mm-hmm. people just being snatched. Yeah. But you mentioned seniors. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, for some people might make them take a pause because, you know, you think of seniors. Who would exploit a senior? But there's, there's elder abuse. There's a lot of things out there, people using them as a means to an end.
Absolutely.
Right? I just think that's something that I don't think most people would think of. So I'm really glad that you mentioned it.
And let's just think about it for a second. Unfortunately and sadly again, as a market and demand problem. The population of the United States, according to census, is getting old. And
right.
they say that
in
the next 30 to 50 years, the population of senior citizens is increasing. So for human traffickers is to be able to market the operation.
Yeah, and otherwise then, they're losing
exactly,
their workers.
Exactly.
Right.
We have had cases all around the United States that senior citizens being exploited for both labor, financial issues,
yep.
and also sexual issues. Hmm. It is surprising to many people, but unfortunately there is a market for human traffickers among senior citizens. And another population is very vulnerable are individuals with disabilities.
Yes.
And if I may add something, disabilities definition, unfortunately, for our community members is difficult to understand. Unfortunately, majority of community only see physical disabilities as
right.
a form of disabilities.
But that intellectual disability
exactly.
as well.
Even mm-hmm. more importantly, post the COVID-19 pandemic, we have seen increasing number of emotional disabilities among the general public.
Right.
And that emotional disabilities is a factor that actually help human traffickers to recruit and target people. Because when you see a person with emotional disability, when you look at them, they are just fine.
Right.
But that emotional disabilities affect on their decisions.
Absolutely.
The consent they may have for different labor, for sexual exploitation, or anything, any activity that they want to do. And that is why it's a perfect target for a human trafficker.
So your organization, the Gateway Alliance Against Human Trafficking, obviously you provide a lot of education, mm-hmm. right? So you provide education to, you know, companies, businesses, students, all kinds of things. Do you also, because I know we've partnered with some other organizations who provide housing as well, mm-hmm. or like, I'll say rehabilitation. I'm not sure if that's the right word. Is that something you all do too? Or are you primary? And I'm not asking you to disclose too much because I know that's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But is that something you do where you work with the individuals once they get out of that trafficking situation? Or are you primarily the preventative, let's advocate against this, that sort of thing?
So primarily we provide prevention and education.
I knew I liked you.
Services.
I knew it.
I know. But we refer survivors and victims if they come to us to those service providers in the area.
And there are several, right?
Oh,
like
yeah,
I know
absolutely.
Crisis Aid, and there are lots of places that really fly under the radar
absolutely.
Because they want to be a safe space.
Yes.
They need
yes.
to be a safe space.
Yes. Absolutely. But we primarily do education. We provide education for the general public, schools, professionals, students, and do any community that is willing to speak or listen to this. We talk to them and educate them about these issues because it is very important. You never know who's going to be in what position to rescue and save a life.
This has to be pretty intense work.
It is.
And I'm wondering how, because, you know, we talk about burnout in the field in general, the nonprofit field. I can imagine that there's a specific kind of intensity and burnout for people with your area of expertise. So I'm wondering how you manage that, not only for you, but also for your staff.
So thank you for the question. This is a great question, and the answer to that could be complicated because we never know what kind of cases or situations we may get into in a given day. But what I can tell you that we try from, so it was for a long time, and still many agencies are speaking about victim-centered approaches, trauma-informed approaches. But actually, recently, I participated in a conference that the focus of the conference was about healing. And what they recommended that we need to be healing-focused.
I'm going to write that down. Healing-focused.
And I think, exactly. And I think this is the answer to our problem. As advocates, I mean, as you mentioned, there are days that we really burn out regarding
right.
what we do.
Right.
And I can't tell you how many days in a given month we just feel that, what is it that I'm doing? I just want to quit.
I know.
Thinking about the services we provide, about victims, their families. So it comes to the servant leadership, that there need to be some people continue doing this because there isn't any win for anyone to just quitting and not resisting this injustice. So it takes lots of courage, resiliency, and also being healing-focused people. I always tell my staff, and also sometimes the staff tell me, just take a couple of hours off.
I know.
Just do something different. The work is always there, especially regarding our work, but it is important to make sure we are able to maintain these human resources. And it's not just about our agency, the people,
sure.
the great people we are working with in the network. For example, imagine those law enforcement that they are working within the internet crimes against children.
Right.
Just
track
down a given live streaming trafficking situation that they received a tip. Their job is actively watching a child being raped, and they are trying to track this down. And it is such a terrible feeling to be in that situation, although they are and we are trying to help. But being in those moments is just so dragging and put people down. So I always recommend that. I think we have been my humble opinion, not disrespecting any colleagues or experts, trauma-informed and victim-centered is that we as a system and advocate, we are focusing on the negative part of it. It sounds like we are giving more power to that trauma. And I think if rather than that, we focus on healing approach center, that's going to be better, because that healing could be the healing for the community, the healing for that victim, the healing for that survivors, their families, and also the healing for that advocate.
I love that we should be healing focused. I love that. And I've really been leaning into the idea. I'm certainly not the first person to say it, and I don't know who came up with the idea or the term, but I'm really leaning into the idea of rest being an act of resistance.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, for servant leaders like you and I and our staff and the other people in our respective fields, you know, it's like, we have to be doing something. We have to be fixing. We have to be helping. We have to be whatever. But then also, like, we need to renew and rest and allow ourselves to feel.
Absolutely.
Because some of the things that, you know, us and our staff are dealing with are very heavy.
They are.
And if we don't feel it and process it, and we're just compartmentalizing all the time, then that's when it really just bubbles up. And then that's when you have burnout or people saying, I can't do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And we
Absolutely.
Need people in the field to keep doing this really hard work.
Absolutely.
How long have you been doing this? And is this always been an area of interest for you?
It has. So our organization established back in 2014 in O'Fallon, Missouri. And we grow and we expanded the area we are covering. So right now we are operating in the state of Missouri.
So did you, were you the founder of this organization?
I am one of the founding members. That is correct. And we have, we try to grow, I mean, make the agency grow because it's an important message.
Of course.
Important work. And hopefully the organization going to leave for the years to come and expand the services to protect.
And you serve the entire state of Missouri.
Yes. We expanded our services.
So how are you funded? Private donations, if people want to contribute?
Absolutely. Donations with from individuals, corporate sponsors, corporate donations, and also through grants from government grants, local governments like CCRB, that are both agencies are receiving that. So again, this is all about the community that understands their role to help us as advocates to continue the job. Sometimes we feel, I'm sure that as a nonprofit, you perhaps hear this. Well, what is it that you are doing? Sometimes people think, especially for our agencies, that we are education prevention focused. We are not just doing anything, or we just have some classes. We go to places to educate people. But sometimes people don't realize that. First of all, education is in power.
Yes. That's right.
It's power. Knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power.
A community, a society has knowledge about any given particular issues. They are able to solve the problem. Right now, about human trafficking, majority of our community members have no clue about the reality of it.
Clue. I was telling someone that you were coming on, and first, the person I was talking to, who is a very educated person, was like, well, why would they be coming on this podcast? Like, not seeing any sort of link at all, number one. But then also, like, well, I didn't know that that still happens. And I'm like, it happens a lot.
Okay, so for sure recommend that person to listen to the podcast. And also, if I may, I also want to make another connection because I know you're working substance abuse field.
Yeah.
One of the issues we have been facing before the pandemic and particularly during and the post-COVID pandemic has been the intersection of human trafficking and drug trafficking. So it is very interesting that majority of even professionals haven't heard about this terminology. There is a situation which is called forced drug dealing.
Forced drug dealing, yes. I know what that is. Tell folks what it is.
I know. So forced drug dealing is when drug dealers actually recruit vulnerable people, particularly vulnerable minors, that they need food, clothes, shelter to survive, to deal the drug for them in exchange of that food, clothes, shelter. So surprisingly to many perhaps audience, if not all of audience, forced drug dealing is a form of labor trafficking that majority of the community, even experts, have not heard about. People see that minor, that 13-year-old teenager, deal the drug, they feel bad for them, and they say, oh, this little kid, this teenager is like his father or her father or mother. It's a family business. They are doing the drug, but they don't realize that. At this age of 13, he or she need to provide for 3-4 other siblings at home because their parents are in drug and they need food and shelter to survive. So what happens, drug dealers that are really familiar about that particular teenager situation, they target them, have them to deal the drug for them in order to give them something, just a small amount to live and survive.
You know, I think a common misconception is that, you know, drug dealers are not very smart.
Yeah.
Or that drug dealers are using their own supply all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the higher you get in up in the chain, so to speak, it's all about power. They're not using the drugs themselves. They're all about money. They're all, I mean, this is money, yes. Right? I mean, this is all about money. And so whether it's forced drug dealing, forced sexual labor, but this is about money and commerce.
All about money and power.
And power. Yes, that whole, I wish at this point in time I could pull up that like wheel of power and control.
Exactly.
Right?
There
because
you
that's,
go.
Yeah, that's, that's what it, maybe we'll like link it in the, bio or something, because that's what it is. It's money making the world go round and power hungry individuals. And so I loved what you said when we first started talking, that we need to, we really need to dismantle the entire system that makes something like this possible. Absolutely. So it's not just the supply side, it's the demand side, right? Absolutely. Like, where is this coming from and why is this allowed to continue?
Exactly. You know, continuing on this point, as much as the community doesn't like to hear what I'm going to say, because this is the right thing to say, don't forget the fact that human traffickers are also living in our the same community.
That's
as
right.
Well as those people who are buying these services.
That's right.
We cannot address human trafficking without addressing the character of human traffickers who are perpetrators.
Yes.
And the character of those people who actually are buying this service.
It's like, why? I mean, it goes... This like links so perfectly with what we do at Prevent Ed, and it's all about prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Why are people buying? What is it that they are buying? Like, and what is driving them to do that? And how do we get so far upstream to think about why people are doing that? How are system has allowed that to happen? What elements are at play that contribute to that? And then, yes, we need to look at the people who are doing it and who are victims of it. But you can't just look at one without looking at all of the others.
You're absolutely right on the target. I mean, in our everyday job, we see fathers, we see grandfathers, mothers, and grandmothers who sell or they buy the services of children, other adults. So when they are trapped in the system, you can't avoid not asking this question, that why?
The why?
I mean, those what if and whys, what happened that this individual felt or committed the action of buying or selling an individual. Why? Like, they have a child the same age, like a father who's
like
buying the services of a teenager while he himself has a daughter the same age.
That really goes to the healing that you were speaking of.
Absolutely.
Because it's not only healing us as practitioners, it's and healing the folks that we're serving, but it's also healing us as a society so that we don't have the act happening. It's like just an all around healing that needs to happen.
It's just a cycle. It's just a cycle that's just repeating itself.
I could talk to you about this for a very long time because my background was in sexual assault prevention and education. I really think that these types of situations, I think people are either uninformed, misinformed, or scared to even open the Pandora's box because they just don't even know what they want to find. They just don't want to find anything out. If folks want you and your staff to educate them, if they're at a church and they want to know, if they want to get involved and volunteer, if they want to donate, how do folks find you all?
So that's a great question. Thank you for asking. So people can visit our website, which is www.ghtmo.org. So there are resources available on our website. We even have online courses free of charge that people can watch. And also there is a form that people can fill out to either donate or even request a speaker for their events, staff programs.
Awesome. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you just want to make sure that people hear about this issue or about your organization?
I think it was a very great comprehensive conversation considering the time. But the last thing, if I want to say for closing, is that please do not judge victims and survivors of human trafficking. We never know what was going on in life of that individual that they get trapped in this system. And just remember, it is not their fault. There was a trafficker who coerced them or engaged in some fraudulent activities or forced them to engage in those activities. If I want them to take away one thing, is that do not judge survivors and victims of human trafficking.
I'm going to leave it there because that was very well said. And I think it's just a nice reminder to everyone to just try to like put the judgment in your back pocket, because we don't know what has led people to make the choices that they're making, if they've even had the choice. So
absolutely.
I think that was very well said. Shima, thank you so much for spending time with me today. I'm so appreciative that you are doing this hard, necessary work. If you like more conversations like this with Shima, if your just like mind is blown by the things that you found out today, please consider rating, reviewing, and subscribing to the podcast. Thank you so much for spending time with me today.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for joining us at The Preventable, brought to you ad-free by PreventEd. PreventEd works to reduce or prevent the harms of alcohol and other drug use through education, intervention, and advocacy. Please visit their website at PreventEd.org. Like what you heard? Rate, review, and subscribe to stay up to date with what we are serving on The Preventable.